Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, my friends. How are you today? It's Nicole. Welcome to my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. So glad to have you guys here with me today. Okay, there is so much going on right now. There is so much going on. So there's not so much that I can talk about yet publicly, but I'm going to say a couple things. The first thing is the podcast is about to launch into a new phase, and I'm going to be able to share more about that phase in the coming weeks. But one thing I want to kind of put out here before anything else can really be talked about in detail is I am going to need a few real-time heals to join me in this new phase of the podcast, which will be a limited season. And there's reasons behind all of this, and I literally don't know the extent that I'm allowed to share. So I'm going to start there and say, if you have been thinking about applying for a real-time heal, I want to narrow the search criteria a bit so you can see if you apply. I'm going to need a few real-time heals, men and women, on any topic. I definitely want to hit on anxiety. I want to hit on fibromyalgia. I want to hit on lower back pain. I want to hit on irritable bowel disease, pelvic pain. So if you are a person who has been doing this work for a while, so the problem with real-time heals is I only have an hour with you. So I cannot take people on air that are like new to this work and have been doing it for a couple weeks, because the amount of teaching I would have to do in that space wouldn't be conducive to sharing a story that would be helpful for the podcast. So what I need, if you're interested and if you'd like to have an hour with me on air, oh, and by the way, if you don't know what a real-time heal is, there's like countless of them already on this podcast. You can look back into the archives and they're all labeled real-time heal at the beginning of the episode. But essentially, it's where I get on air with a person that I know nothing about except for a brief introduction email that they've sent me, and we do a cold therapy session, which is me, no preparation on either part. We get on air and I help them to find the spaces that maybe they haven't seen or that they need to focus on or come to some clarification or enlightenment on certain topics. And it's really just a very fluid, natural, organic process that evolves out of this effort. So, and it happens the same way every time. So I just kind of put it out there, kind of connect with my higher guides and let it rip. And the person who I'm speaking to is always just such a willing and beautiful participant. So I've been doing this for all the years that we've had this podcast together. So essentially, if you're interested in applying, it has to be someone who's done this work. I'm not going to put a time frame on it, but long enough that you have seen some changes. Maybe you have gotten rid of one symptom and it's moved to another, or you've gotten rid of a large amount of symptoms and now it's settled on anxiety, or it flips between anxiety and physical symptoms, or any, as long as you have a general understanding of the material and of the process and have seen it work in your own life, because this is inevitably, most people have seen it work in some way, shape, or form by the time they find their way to me. But for the real-time heals, that's really, really important. So if this applies to you, and if you would like to send me your story, please send me an email to thecureforchronicpain@gmail.com. I have several accounts, but this is the one that I receive real-time heals in, and I need the subject line to be real-time heal. I get millions of emails. That's hyperbolic. I get lots of emails. And it's really helpful if you are trying to contact me to just put real-time heal, that's all you need to write, in the subject line and write me a little bit of your story. It doesn't have to be pages and pages. It could be a few paragraphs of what it was like, what you've been doing and what it's like now. And so I can sift through these and choose a few real-time heals for this new limited season of the podcast. So thank you for your willingness and if you're interested. And it's always such a wonderful, positive experience for both of us because I get to be so present, so in the moment. It's so alive and you guys get to get helped and move further into the process. And many, many, many times after a real-time heal, I hear back from the participants and they are just doing so beautifully. And let me just say this also, because I think it's important to note. This process is a process of your life, like your journey through being human and being alive. So this isn't, you are not a problem to fix. You are not a book to be closed. You are not a package to tie a ribbon on. You know, you're human life, and so am I. And being human beings, we are on a lifelong journey that, you know, in my understanding, my spiritual understanding happens long before this particular birth and happens long after, but that's just what I choose to believe. It's the journey of a soul, but whatever you choose to believe, even if you are a card-carrying atheist and you believe that this is the only life you get, which is totally, totally valid and might be totally true because no one can prove anything except for what we can see and feel right in front of us. Even if that's where you are, that's a beautiful place to be. And it really doesn't matter. But whatever it is, this is a human life. Okay. I guess we can all agree upon we're living it. Here we are, sentient and alive. And this human experience is one to be lived. And so it's not a problem to be fixed. And so when I say I hear back from people who have done real-time heal and they're doing beautifully, it's because the real-time heal invited them more deeply into their own work. And as we do our work, more is revealed. And as more is revealed, it's so annoying because more work is revealed. And I am so sorry to all of you humans out there because I am human too. And I know how hard this is. And I know the work is so, it's like, I don't want to do any more work. I totally get it. It's also the only way to feel better. And it's the only way to heal our bodies. And it's the only way to heal our mind-body systems. And this is where we're at. So sorry and sorry, not sorry. So here we are. If you would like to apply to real-time heal, please do so. Because it's a great win-win for both of us. And I look forward to revealing to you guys in the upcoming weeks this new plan for the podcast and where it is taking us. So that's the first thing I wanted to say. The second thing I wanted to say is we are coming up on April. We're going to turn our heads and it's going to be there. And so reminding you guys until March 1st, the giveaway is live, which means that everyone who signs up for my April retreat at the Art of Living Retreat Center, which is April 8th through the 10th, is going to get the chance to win a free session with me. One person will be chosen out of the group, but it'll be pretty good odds because it's not going to be a huge group. And so if you sign up before March 1st at midnight, you are entered to win. The drawing will be on March 2nd, and we will get to have our session, our one-on-one session prior to meeting in April. So you will be all set with whatever we talk about there. So that is happening. Click the link, the retreats tab on my website or the resources tab at thecureforchronicpain.com, and you can sign up to join us there. It's going to be a fantastic weekend. And as I hoped, COVID seems to be chilling out. Omicron seems to have really dipped down at this point. I'm recording this on Valentine's Day, February 14th, to be aired this week. And so my hope is that we will not need to have masks and we'll be able to really just have a lovely, connected, intimate time together. Okay, so that's that. Other than that, if you have any questions or concerns about the work and you need help, please go to my Journal Speak page at Facebook, Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs, LCSW. Click to sign up. The admins will admit you and we can all be together in that conversation. It's free help, lots of free help, tons of free resources. Just go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. So today on the podcast, I want to talk about the roots of people pleasing. I've talked about people pleasing ad nauseum on Instagram, where I put out new content every day. at Nicole Sachs LCSW on Instagram. And we talk a ton about these quote unquote TMS personality characteristics. And one of them, one of the huge origin stories of TMS and the foundations upon which the brain and the nervous system feel we need protection from our own huge feelings is people pleasing. And so many of us, myself included, are recovering people pleasers. And it's been a lifelong journey. So let's talk a bit about the roots of people pleasing, because people pleasing begins nearly at birth. And you come by it honestly, I promise you. If you are a chronic people pleaser, you come by it honestly because it is built into the biology and the physiology of being a human being. So let's start with the fact that human beings are social animals. We are bred and raised and born to live in groups. We are interdependent beings. We are also, as I say often, soft shells. We're soft-shelled animals, and so we don't have an exoskeleton to keep us, quote-unquote, safe from the outside world. And one of the ways we gain safety, which is the main job of the nervous system, which is to keep us safe and alive with our responses to triggers and stimuli, one of the ways we stay safe is we are surrounded by our people, our tribe, our group, our community, our circle, our trusted circle. So that's how we stay alive. We stay alive through the help of others. And this has been true since the dawn of man. And so there are cues. There are tender, gentle cues that we receive from very, very young age about how welcoming or unwelcoming our tribe is. And the irony of the situation, and sort of the sad part, if we're going to use the word sad, is that sometimes there is no intention or no obvious intention to the rejection that we feel, meaning that it's not just about being born into an abusive or neglectful situation. This is not just about having a tribe that rejects you on its face. This sometimes, and we talk about this a bit on the podcast, can be an energetic mismatch with your tribe. You know, I hear this a lot from the LGBTQ+ community. I am a member of this community and in addition wrote my master's thesis in graduate school on gay kids and trans kids that were kicked out of their homes and were living in homeless shelters. And many of them were teenagers. And that's what I spent a lot of time in these shelters, and that became my community for a bit. And I wrote my thesis on what it was like for these kids and the origin stories of these kids and the fallout of this kind of rejection. Now, this kind of rejection, this is just one example, can begin very, very simply with an energetic mismatch to a parent or a community. If you're a gay child born into an incredibly rigorously conservative situation, and you know, let's not have any judgment on the word conservative. I'm just using it as a placeholder for any situation where being gay is not acceptable. And we can talk about any sort of way that we show up since birth. It could be being very sensitive could be the problem. It could be being very shy and you're born into a really extroverted family or community. It could be being very a free thinker and being born into a very rigidly thinking community. So, you know, gay is one option, but there's so many different ways that we could potentially be born into naturally a situation where we feel that because we are not right, we just have that inner itch that we're not okay, that we're not seen, we're not being felt as okay. We feel the need somehow to betray that natural instinct in ourselves and to please. And the thing about people pleasing is it can feel so unfair when we look back like this. You know, I am a huge believer that if you are gay, you are born that way. If you are trans, you are born that way. If you are sensitive, you are born that way. If you are shy, you are born that way. Yes, of course. And if you're extroverted and really out there, you are born that way. Of course, there are ways in which we are nurtured to either accept or deny parts of ourselves, but so much of what we bring, and this is just my opinion, so don't shoot me down if you disagree. We can each have our own opinion. But for me, in my understanding of being part of this human race, so much of what we are is our nature, is what we come into this birth with. And so if we get a sense from a very early age, it can be in the infant phase or the toddler phase, that we are not getting the cues, both verbal and not verbal, energetic cues from our surroundings, our group, our tribe, that we're okay. If we're not getting that cue, we start to look around, and this is an instinctive process. This is not always intentional. We start to look around for how we can save our own lives. And I do not say that to be extra dramatic. The human being is soft-shelled and the human being is a social animal. If we get a sense that we might be rejected from our tribe, there is a natural survival instinct that gets kicked up that we will connect at any cost. And the first cost that usually needs to be paid is that we start to reject parts of ourselves that don't seem to be in keeping with what the tribe needs us to be and the way in which we try to ensure our connection and our inclusion in the tribe is to start pleasing people and putting ourselves last. And this is so natural. So the first thing I always want to do is please, 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 hand to heart, double hand to heart, forgive yourself for betraying yourself, for forsaking yourself, for selling yourself down the river, however it felt at a young age where you started having to please other people in order to be accepted or in order to be loved, quote unquote. They may have loved you, but they didn't act like they loved you unless you were a certain way, that kind of a thing. It is very organic, instinctual. It's just being a human animal. So here we are in these families where we are feeling threatened. We're feeling like we're going to be cast out. And we might not even know. This might be a very largely unconscious process, but we are getting some sort of a sense, our spidey sense, our animal instinct that we're going to get cast out if we aren't able to comport with the behavior of the tribe. Okay. So the first thing we do is we look around. We look around and like, let's just pretend just for the sake of example that this is an unconscious process. So we're not really looking around with our eyes. We're looking around with our unconscious antenna and we are saying, what do I need to be? So, I mean, it's always easiest for me to use my personal experience because I have such a felt experience of it. But for me, I know from a very young age, from both of my parents, it felt like it was not, I'm not going to say it wasn't okay because it wasn't overtly taught to me that it wasn't okay, but it wasn't the premium version of myself. It wasn't awesome for me to be full of big feelings, for me to not do what they said I needed to do, you know, and I guess that's a pretty typical experience of being a child. You know, your parents tell you what to do, and if you don't do it, that's not received well. But certainly in the 70s, when I was a young person, really young person, born in 72, I think the parenting was a little bit different than it was today. So, you know, if I misbehaved, it was you get screamed at, you get spanked, you get told, you know, go to your room. And this is not even to dramatize it. It's just that's like the way it was. You know, there wasn't so much hippy-dippy parenting. And I say that with absolute love and connection because I've definitely done a fair share of it myself, of like really sitting down with kids and listening to them and things that I think are really helpful to an extent wasn't really done very much. So there was that message I was given. And then, of course, there was my dad who was incredibly demanding on me, especially academically, but more than academically, that I thought a certain way, that I had a certain way of reaching him and meeting the world and showing up and looking and behaving and carrying myself. And it was that was an overt criticism. That was, you're doing it wrong. And see, I might have found myself to be defensive and to some extent rebellious as a young person, but the deepest feeling I do remember is wanting acceptance and validation and approval of my father and my parents. And so what I know I did at a very young age is I became a people pleaser. I wanted to be good. My parents would fight and I wanted to be as easy as possible. My dad would demand things of me and I disagreed with him sometimes, but I would just kill myself to be what he wanted me to be, to get the grade, to show up to him, to say, look what I did. And so often that was met with a less than stellar response. It was mostly, oh, you did that? Okay, well, that's all right. What else can you do? Or you got all A's and a B? Well, we're going to talk about that B. What could you have done better? And, you know, let's talk about a strategy for this, that, and the other. And, you know, it was, I don't think he had a clue of what he was doing to me. And I don't think I had a clue of how much I felt I needed to be what he needed to be, needed me to be. And I think that I just got totally lost in it. Forgot I'm talking on a podcast. The point is here, that in a million different ways, you know, death by a thousand paper cuts, we learn that if we are going to be kept alive on an unconscious level, we need to be what other people need us to be. And sometimes that can be such extreme situations like capital T trauma, abuse, neglect, witnessing of unthinkable things. And sometimes that can be little T trauma, which is this death by a thousand paper cuts, you know, parents who ignore us, parents who disregard, you know, don't hear, don't see, don't listen, don't care, or listen, care, see, and hear too much, hover over, micromanage, criticize, obsess over, you know, hover a parent, the helicopter parent, you know, there's so many different ways. There's many different ways to reach the same conclusion, which is we start to feel as if we are only safe when we are being what other people need us to be. And here is the sticky part of people pleasing. It has such a positive result in so many situations and relationships because people love it. People love it when you are being what they need you to be. It is so super convenient for them. And it is also really pleasant because a lot of people pleasers are great caretakers. And so when we start taking care of other people, they love to take it for granted. And this is not even to say that these are bad people or these are underappreciative people. This is just human dynamic. We fall into patterns. And when we fall into patterns of people pleasing, sometimes we get a lot of bones thrown at us, you know, just throw me a bone kind of thing. We just get, you know, people who keep us around because we're so helpful, or relationships that seem to hinge on us showing up in a certain way. This happens tons with parenting, you know, being a certain kind of parent, and the kids just show up as if they expect you to be that way. And then, of course, there's the feeling of, well, I made this bed, I have to lay in it. You know, I've always shown up this way, I better keep showing up this way. Because when we start drawing boundaries, which is such a concept so closely related to people pleasing, because boundaries threaten the people pleasers in ourselves, we get negative reactions from our families. We get pushback. We get, wait, you're not the person I thought you were. And so it's really challenging. And so, you know, this people pleasing benefit of being more solidly in the center of the boat in our communities can keep us people pleasing for a lifetime. So think about it. Think about it. It's the perfect storm. We people please out of unconscious necessity from a young age. Then we get this positive feedback. It's sometimes painfully positive because we're not necessarily feeling happy and fulfilled, but positive feedback from the tribe that, oh, yes, 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 no, this is perfect. You're showing up exactly as we need you to be, even if you yourself, your authentic self is not even in the room. And then we get caught in the seeming jail of our dynamic, which is we're safe. So that nervous system space is super, super chill and happy when we're people pleasing because it's being told that, yeah, you're right. You're right where you need to be. There's no way you're going to get forced out of the tribe now. Because you're essential. You're an essential part. You are just playing the role, being everything everyone needs you to be. So here we are. However, similar to chronic pain, similar to chronic illness conditions, symptoms, syndromes, diagnoses that we talk about so much on this program. That nervous system safe of you being in the middle of the boat and being everything that everyone needs you to be is safe in the unsafest way. Just like your migraine disorder is safe in the unsafest way. You're safe, according to your nervous system, home, in bed, canceled plans, on disability, nowhere near all the dangerous triggers of the world. And I put that in quotes. But are you safe? Are you happy? Are you fulfilled home in your bed with a migraine? I think we can all agree. Absolutely not. So this nervous system safe of you being this people pleaser in the center of the tribe, you know, such an essential player in the fabric of this environment, it's not really safe. It's just nervous system safe. And the nervous system can often be misunderstanding of your human heart. The nervous system can really misunderstand your human heart because your human heart is full of longing and full of authenticity and full of desire to be true to yourself. And your nervous system finds that to be incredibly dangerous because that can, on its face, threaten its perception of your safety within the tribe. Now let's talk about actual truth. You know, Brené Brown talks about vulnerability being our greatest strength. People don't always see it like that at first, right? People might see vulnerability as weakness, but people who've experienced real vulnerability and the power of showing up as your most authentic, vulnerable self know that that is mad power, because that is where people start looking to you as a light. And that's where people start saying, wow, I want to be near that person, because not only does that person make me feel safe to be vulnerable in myself, where in my deepest sense I'm aching to be, that person is a fucking brave, bold example of how to live, right? So that's why vulnerability is strength. But at first, it doesn't look like strength. At first, it feels really dangerous. And so this is similar, you know, fighting against this nervous system that doesn't understand that people pleasing is actually dangerous to you, because it requires so much repression of your emotions. When you have not yet understood that, it can feel very dangerous. Because when we seek to be in the middle of the boat, in the middle of our tribe, our nervous system wants to do that as simply as possible. And the simplest way, bred from the beginning of our lives, is just be quiet, be good, be still, be convenient. Be what other people want you to be, and that is no longer working for us. And I'm going to explain to you why. This is not no longer working for us just because it doesn't allow us to be authentic, because in that sense, authenticity feels like a dream prize, you know, after all other needs are met. It feels like high-end needs. It's not actually that true, and here's why. So much of chronic pain is fueled by the fact that when we are inauthentic, when we are people-pleasing, when we are without boundaries and allowing people to have their way with us, we are so angry inside. We are so sad inside. We are so ashamed inside. We are so far from our authentic heart that we need to repress so many emotions. Now, you yourself might be sitting there and being like, but I don't even feel angry. I don't feel ashamed. I don't feel sad. I'm just kind of doing my thing. And I get it. But what you need to understand, and the basis that my work is built on, and Dr. Sarno's theories, is that so much of that emotion is seen as so dangerous to the nervous system, it just goes directly into your unconscious world. It's repressed. It's the defense mechanism of repression that keeps us safe from ourselves and safe from experiences that our nervous system and brain deem too dangerous to feel. And so when I'm people pleasing, okay, so let's continue to use me as an example. Let's do it. When I was taught my whole life, and when I learned through my energetic mismatch with my father that I needed to show up as it seemed perfect, I had to be physically really presentable. I had to have all my manners. I had to know exactly what to say and do in every situation. I needed to have straight A's on my report card, which was a piece of paper, but I also had to exhibit that in my day-to-day activities. And if I wasn't doing that, because that was what was required to please him, then I was going to be shut out. I was going to be iced out or lectured or tortured in some way, shape, or form. So that's how it started. the whole thing with the memes, how it started and how it's going. So how that became how it's going in my life is I would have like relationships, like love relationships, and that person would fall in love with someone, but that person wasn't me that they fell in love with. That person was the scanned image of how I perceived I needed to be based on my hypervigilance of what they seemed to be projecting they needed. So I would look at them and say, okay, I can see from what they say, what they do, how they act, verbal and nonverbal cues, that they want a girl that is this, 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 and this. And then I would just be it because I wanted to be wanted by them. So of course, fast forward X number of months or years into the relationship, that person's in love with someone and that person wants someone. But that person isn't me that they want. It's the person, it's the projection of me that I had created, which is totally on me. But there's no fault here because we're all just doing our best. We're all hand to heart, double hand to heart. We're all just doing our best. And when I was doing that, I was doing my best. And so the point is, when you're living inauthentically, that kind of lifestyle required me to suppress so much of those feelings, these key feelings, not knowing it, but suppressing rage and shame and fear and sadness and embarrassment and regret and self-loathing and all of those things that feel too dangerous to the nervous system to feel. So we shove them down, shove them down, shove them down. Now we're drawing into basic Sarno theory, which is your mind-body system is not separate. It is all a dance, a fluid dance, absolutely fluid. There is no delineation, none. Between the mind, body, and the spirit, for that matter. But let's just do the mind and the body. It's constantly dancing, constantly dancing. Are we safe? Are we unsafe? So how does my nervous system and my brain keep me safe when my repressed emotions, as Sarno says, reach critical mass and threaten to spill over from my unconscious to my conscious mind, threatening to tell my brain and my nervous system exactly how angry, scared, sad, ashamed, regretful, etc., I feel? Well, that moment of reaching critical mass where all of those emotions, if you picture them like a liquid, are about to spill over the side of our science beaker, my brain and my nervous system make an unconscious split-second reflexive decision that something needs to be triggered in the body to protect me and divert me from feeling those feelings. And that's when I reach for a toy on the floor and my back goes out, where I look at the sun in a way that I think is like, oh, I just stared too quickly and it triggers a migraine. When I have a bite of food that might be a nightshade vegetable or something spicy or something with gluten or casein or whatever, and I run to the bathroom with irritable bowel. When I, you know, have sex with somebody that I don't feel 100% about and now I have chronic pelvic pain. On and on and on and on. And we think there's a physical reason. We think there's a physical origin to that. Oh, I reached for the toy and I must have just thrown my back out. You know, I had sex with that guy and he must have had some sort of, you know, a bacterial infection, whatever. Yes, sometimes that is true. But anything that is chronic, anything that is chronic beyond the natural human medical model, agreed time of healing, or based on a, you know, a run of medicine, like if you did have an infection, something like that. Anything that's chronic is so often related to the mind-body system because the brain and the nervous system have the power to trigger and regulate all of our bodily systems and muscle systems and inflammation based on the fact that that's what it does to keep us alive anyway. You know, when we have terrible news, we lose our appetites because when it's time to deal with the trauma, the last thing the body needs is to need to be hungry and to be fed and then to have to use the bathroom. So we lose, our digestive system shuts down in times of trauma because we are no longer able to deal with that. So, I mean, this is all very scientifically based, very physical. But what happens when we people please to an extent and we hit that critical mass, we start getting sick. And sick is just an overreaching term for however it shows up in you. It could be fatigue. It could be depression. It could be anxiety. It could be any number of physical manifestations. It could be long COVID. It could be a lack of joy for life. It could be neurological symptoms. I mean, I have seen it all. And if you are sitting there being a bit cynical, which by the way, because I can't ruin this for everyone because this podcast airs after February 14th, that was the Wordle today, cynic. If you're finding yourself being cynical when you hear this, please know that I speak from authority of seeing thousands and thousands and thousands of cases of people with myriad chronic conditions get completely better by using the methods that I teach, that I carry from Dr. John Sarno, that the mind-body community is teaching, which is understanding how to get our nervous systems from fight or flight to rest and repair, understanding how to unearth these repressed emotions and allow the body to come into alignment, the symptoms stop firing. So even though you thought your migraines were because of the sun or because of what you ate or because of the fact that your mother and your grandmother got them before you, because that's, you thought that it was physical, and I get it. I totally get it. I was you before I was me. When you unearth your emotions, when you understand this process, when you do your journal speak practice, when you do your meditation, when you practice understanding and belief and self-compassion, all the things I teach, and you never get a migraine again. Okay. So that's how it goes. So I guess what I'm trying to say, and I feel like I'm kind of going all over the place with this, but that's what this podcast tends to be. What I'm trying to say is that people pleasing, although you came by it honestly, although it looked like it had a decent, good side effect, although it created safe in the unsafest way in your nervous system by putting you in the center of the tribe, although, what it has done is required you to throw yourself at the end of the line again and again and again. And when you do that, your brain and your nervous system have to deal with the onslaught of tons and tons of big feelings. You might not, quote, feel them, but they are felt somewhere. So if they can't be felt in your heart and in your conscious mind, they must be felt in your shoulder or your hip or your stomach or your back or your pelvis or your head or your skin or your anxiety, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what's the solution? What's the solution? It's hard, guys. It's hard. I feel tremendous empathy and compassion for you and for me as I talk about the solution, because the solution rocks our world. It really fucking does. The solution requires that we challenge patterns that we've been doing for a really, really long time that we came by in a way that felt like survival. So first, before you talk about the solution, you gotta just wrap your arms around yourself and say, I get it and I feel you and I'm sorry and I know this is hard. I know this is hard, honey. I know. Because you thought that this was how you had to be, consciously and unconsciously. And now you're being told you're not allowed to be that way anymore or else you're going to be sick. And that sucks. That sucks. And that's so often the case here in this work, right? You're hitting a wall. It's too painful to stay and it's too terrifying to leave. And what to do? What to do? And this is where you'll hear me say it often and always. Life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse. There are only two choices. There's always going to be pain in doing what we need to do as human beings. That's why this is Earth School and it's hard. And we're here to learn lessons and the work is hard. And the solution to this people-pleasing debacle is severalfold. The first is to pause. Big fat pause, press it down and let it stay and say, man, what Nicole's talking about here is true. Not psyched about it, but it's true. So that's the first. The first is to understand this is happening. This conversation we're having is not conjecture. I'm certain this is happening. May not be happening to you, but it's happening to lots of us. And if it's happening to you, it's time to pause and say, no, this is happening. I am doing this. I'm doing this with my boss, with my colleagues, with my friends, with my parents, with my family, with my kids, with my husband, with my wife, with my partner, with myself. I am a people pleaser and it's hurting me. And then to acknowledge that maybe it feels impossible to be any different, but just, you know, life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse. If you don't want your symptoms, your anxiety, your low energy, your fatigue, your lack of joy for life, then this something might need to change. This is why I talk about journal speak, because really step two after the pause is you do this work on your own. And when I say on your own, it could be with a therapist or it could be with a trusted friend or with my journal speak page on Facebook. Like it could be you're not alone, but it won't be necessarily in your most intimate and personal relationships. It's got to start with you getting to know you. Because if you've been people pleasing all this time, I mean, honestly, how well do you even know yourself, right? I found myself there for sure. How well do you even know yourself in knowing how you really feel about things? I mean, some of us have lost ourselves in other people so completely. My God, did I do it forever? Forever. Until my body said no more. Maybe your body's saying no more. So the journal speak practice, which I'm not going to obviously go into here because there are tons of places to learn about it. But if you're new to this, just go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, click on the resources tab, and there is a page called How to Journal Speak. Listen to my free video series on YouTube. The channel is called The Cure for Chronic Pain, and the Healing Yourself 1-4 is the series. Healing Yourself parts 1-4. Listen to it. It's free. You will learn how to journal speak. Read my book, The Meaning of Truth. You'll learn how to journal speak. Take my online course. If you take my online course, you'll really, very intimately with me, learn how to journal speak. So, you know, journal speak is beautiful because it doesn't involve these people. So it's not scary to your nervous system. See, this is key. We need to keep your nervous system safe while we're doing this work, because if it's unsafe, like if you're journal speaking to other people who don't understand you, or if you're journal speaking and leaving your writing out where someone might find it, this is all stuff you'll learn about when you learn about the process, you're not going to be safe, and safety is required. Your nervous system, let's compare your nervous system to a 5-year-old child, very confident, very sure of herself, and very little, and needing to be also protected and needing to be held and to be comforted while it's learning. And it needs to learn that you're safe to feel these big feelings, and that must be done in a space of safety. So journal speak begins by yourself in a sense. And so this work is personal. And then what happens? Okay, well then you do this work. Okay, so this work has 3 facets, as you know: belief, doing the work, which is your journal speak practice and related mind-body modalities, and patience and kindness for yourself. So you're doing that. You're doing the work on yourself. You're controlling what you can control, which is your own actions, behaviors, and intentions. Okay, you're doing that. Then what might have to happen, I'm so sorry and I love you, what might have to happen is you might have to draw boundaries. And that's going to feel really hard. And once again, I'm not going to go super into boundaries now because I have so many teachings on it, but boundaries are the first part of understanding how to un-people please. And, you know, it's a whole thing. And if you're interested in another sort of way to learn about this, is I have these retreat recordings that you can access on my website. You can purchase them. And one of them is on boundaries. One of them is on people pleasing. The people pleasing and boundaries one might actually be in the same retreat, if I remember correctly. But anyway, if you want to listen to me lecture specifically on those two topics more than this, you can go over to my website and get that under retreat recordings. But the point is, boundaries are very essential. Boundaries are safety. Boundaries are self-love. And boundaries start to enable us to be more authentically ourselves. And when you are authentically yourself, there is no reason to repress many emotions at all. And you become so well. So let me just wrap this podcast by saying this. I used to be people pleaser extraordinaire. Extraordinary. I think I won the Academy Award a couple of years in the 80s and 90s, maybe even the 2000s. I was very, very big in the world of people pleasing. And then I got really sick in several different iterations of my healing journey, which I talk about all the time. And I learned and I learned and I learned. And then I was like super, super addicted and alcoholic, and I had to get sober, and I learned. And man, these lessons are not easy. But little by slowly, I learned how to live in my authentic self, and I learned not to people please. And I have come at the age of 49 and a half to really, truly, I will tell you guys, I mean this from my deepest heart, I do not people please anymore, almost at all. I am kind. I am so kind. I'm communicative. I am gentle. I'm very compassionate. And I am very boundaried. I understand that no is a complete sentence. I understand that my needs are as important as other people's, and in some situations more important if I need to really take care of myself in order to put on my oxygen mask before I assist others, and this is including my children. I think if you interviewed my kids, you would find, even if they were in a confessional and they didn't think I would ever hear, you would find them say that I am one of the more generous people and kind and accommodating people they've ever met. But they also would tell you that when I say it's enough, it's enough. And when I say I need a minute, I take that minute. And when I say now it's time for you to do that for yourself, it is time for you to do that for yourself. And that's boundaries. And that's not pleasing others. And that's understanding on a very, very deep level that me showing up to be what other people need me to be is not what I need to feel safe, to be safe. And it's not what I need to stay in those relationships. So I guess a good thing to end on is, what do we need to stay in the relationships? What do we need to stay in the middle of the boat? Because, like, no doubt we need to be in the middle of the boat. Like, no doubt we are a communal society. We are a society. We need to socialize. We need to be with one another to stay safe, protected, alive, cared for. Certainly as we age, you know, and as in every phase of life. And so what do we need to do to show up to be in relationships? Well, first, we have to unlearn these toxic habits that we were taught out of necessity and survival. We taught ourselves sometimes out of necessity and survival. We have to unlearn them, which is what the work is. And then we have to understand that what people really need is for us to be able to hold space for them to have their own journeys. I am a parent of three teenagers. I talk about it all the time. I think I talked about it last week or the week before when I did my solo. I mean, the kids are driving me to... they're just driving me crazy, and not because they're doing anything wrong, because they're living their own human lives, and I have to witness it, and I have to try to help, and I have to try to not help, and it's so hard. It's so hard, and I have to tell you that learning that I don't need to please them, and I just need to hold space with love and kindness while they have their own experiences, it's saving their lives too. And that's something to understand about boundaries. When we draw boundaries, when we understand our limits, when we are true ourselves, not only are we healthy and vibrant in our own bodies, we are doing our best to facilitate the journeys of those we love. And so finally, I'll say that my body, let's talk about my body for a minute, my physical health. I am not joking. And we can knock on wood. We can, if you're of the Jewish faith, you can say kanahura, poo-poo. Spit on the ground, for those of you who understand that. It's kind of like, you don't want to jinx yourself, but I'm just going to say it because we only have today. I'm healthier than I've ever been in my absolute entire life. I am more physically healthy. I am more physically able. I can do anything. I mean, I'm incredibly athletic. I still have the same broken back on MRI. I can lift anything. I can run anything. I can climb anything. I can do anything. I have more energy than I've ever had in my life. I don't take supplements. I don't particularly eat any certain way. I eat what I want to eat. You know, I try to do my best. I'm more full of life. I'm more full of love. I'm more present than I've ever been in my entire life. Being honest, I'm just kind of giving you an inventory of me right now. And I have better boundaries, and I'm maybe the least people-pleasy I've ever been. And I used to think I needed this to stay alive. I would have passed a lie detector test in my early 30s if you had asked me specific questions about what kind of mom I needed to be, what kind of wife I needed to be, what kind of alcohol I needed in order to stay alive, which would subdue my need to probably be as perfect and people-pleasing as I thought at the time. What kind of therapist I needed to be, how I had to show up, how I had to look, how I had to dress. Yeah. I would have passed a lie detector test that said I needed to have that shit in order to literally breathe. And none of that is true today. And guess what? Here's the irony. I'm a better mom, partner. Well, I don't have a partner right now, but would be. Therapist, podcaster, business person, dog owner, friend. I'm such a good friend. And I love that I'm a good friend. I love that I can say that confidently. I'm a good friend. I'm a loving person. And it's from doing this work. It's all from doing this work. So this went in 10 different directions I wasn't sure it would, but here we are. Here we are, you and me. And your life is going to go in 10,000 million directions that you didn't think it would, and there you'll be. And there you are, and here we are. So, as always, it's such a love to spend time with you. It's such a pleasure. I love talking to you because, like, you guys might think I'm sitting here in the studio with a microphone talking to Blue Dog, who's snoring over there on the other side of the room, but I'm really talking to you. I see you. I see you. I get it. I sit here and I conjure you guys because I've just talked and interacted with so many thousands of people since I started this journey of doing this thing. And I see you. I really do. I see you laying there in your bed or in your car or at work or just feeling like shit. And I see you and I know what's out there for you. And I know sometimes life needs to bring you to your knees in order for you to be able to get the epiphanies and the understanding you need. And maybe I'm a small part of that. And if so, I'm grateful. So anyway, on that note, lots of love. And this is Nicole Sachs, and this has been the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. If you're enjoying it, if this is bringing you a little light in your life, please go over to iTunes and rate and review it. It really brings joy to me to read your reviews, and it really brings a lot of people to the podcast, which so many people need it. So thank you for that. And until next week, I'll see you here again. All right. Bye-bye.